Confidence starts with loving who you are. And when your skin feels nourished and glows on the outside, you naturally radiate confidence from the inside. Give your skin a glow up with Osea's clinically proven Mega Moisture Duo. This ultra-hydrating body care features two of Osea's best sellers, Undaria Algae Body Oil and Undaria Collagen Body Lotion. These seaweed-powered heroes use skincare-level ingredients normally reserved for your face for results you can see and confidence you can feel. Osea has been making clean, clinically proven seaweed-infused face and body care products for over 28 years. This luxurious skincare is vegan, cruelty-free, and climate-neutral certified, so you never have to choose between your values and your best skin. Glow from the inside out. Get 10% off your first order with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code GLOW.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Hi everybody, welcome back to A Change in Attitude, where we suffer the indignity of going through the Attitude Era of WWE and give our thoughts and opinions on it. And fortunately for me, this is not a project that I have taken on my own, so you have me, the pleasure of having me, Mags, and I have dragged along two cohorts through this horrible, horrible journey of 1996 Raw. With me today, my good friend, Tanner, the Texas gentleman. How are you, sir?
Howdy, everybody. Welcome to the show. It's good to be here. Happy to have watched this hellish pay-per-view.
Awesome. And the person that has spent the last 16 weeks or so carrying this show on her back, the star, the draw, if you will, of a change in attitude, Ori the draw. Ori, how are you, ma'am?
I'm doing okay. I still don't. Okay. I'm not even.
It's taking on a life of its own. It's now out there in the ether that you are the draw. People are accepting it. They don't listen for me, and they certainly don't listen for Tanner and his insightful commentary. It's you. You're the star of the show.
Really? Because I see more tweets coming out about you two than I do.
Yeah, like, will they shut the fuck up?
Yeah, because we desperately need it. That's the problem. Like it's like Live Aid.
You got to get the attention off of me for a little bit.
Yeah, it's like Live Aid. It's charity, really. That's what it is.
So
as Tanner alluded to, we got to watch a really top draw pay-per-view, one of the best that the WWF put out around this time, certainly the best from September the 22nd, 1996, that's a given. We're watching In Your House 10, Mind Games, which came from the Core State Center, I believe, in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, with a packed attendance of 13,000, which is actually the highest attendance of all the In Your House shows that we've had so far. Ori, do you have to hand the Peacock episode number?
Bear with me. I will. It is
so
season
no.
two.
The answer is no. I didn't have that
I
at hand.
Did.
I actually did.
I had it written right. down. It's right. season two, episode five. I did have it written down. I just wasn't looking at it exactly. You had to let me flip the page.
So, this event actually had a free-for-all, which unfortunately we don't get now on the WWE Network / Peacock. And that free-for-all event had Savio Vega fighting against Marty Jannetty. And it actually kind of led into the first match. But before we get there, we get a little video package leading into the show, and we get the introduction of the announce team, which is a good old Vince, Jim Ross, and Mr. Perfect, who is usually one of the better announcers that we get. We break into a Savio interview segment where he's very vocal, very agitated, giving us both English and Spanish of how he's going to whoop the ass of Justin Hawk Bradshaw. For context, he's angry at Justin, not because of all the times we've seen these face off on the road previous, but because Justin Hawk Bradshaw attacked him after the match with Marta Jannetty, and that set up a Caribbean strap match, which is different to a regular strap match, I guess. So, yeah, we're opening the card with Bradshaw versus Savio Vega in a Caribbean strap match, and the announcement team make it known that this is the specialty match of Savio Vega. He's never lost a Caribbean strap match. And we do actually get some interesting points that is not actually linked to the match per se. We get to see a few little intruders during this match. We get a young upstart company from the bowels of Philadelphia trying to make a name for themselves here. And they're alluded to by the announce team. I don't know if they actually mentioned the company by name. That is awesome. You will never know what I'm laughing at there, listener.
Just leave it to your imaginations.
That's an us thing.
One day you may be privy to such information.
Yes, absolutely. But yeah, I don't believe that they mentioned the company by name, but it's ECW, the company that we know from there. We get to see Sandman. There's a bit of Tommy Dreamer in there. And they get involved in this match for a little while until the security team eject them from the building. And that, for me, was the most interesting part of the match. This was a regular, by-the-mill strap match for me. There was nothing that made it particularly Caribbean, aside from having Savio Vega involved. But it was very much a David and Goliath-style match where Bradshaw was using his strength to kind of like power through touching the turnbuckles, and we got Savio using his speed and his wiliness to kind of counteract that. The finish comes where Bradshaw is essentially dragging Savio Vega around the ring to touch the turnbuckles, and Savio sneakily is touching them behind Bradshaw. So when we get to the final turnbuckle, and they've both touched three turnbuckles each, Savio tenses up the strap so Bradshaw can't make the last touch. Bradshaw pulls on the strap, which kind of catapults Savio through Bradshaw, and Savio is able to get that final touch and win the match. Ori, let's go to you first. What did you think of the Caribbean strap match?
Well, the thing that got me was I don't remember who it was on commentary, but they said that Savio Vega had never lost a Caribbean strap match, which led me to wonder how many Caribbean strap matches have there actually been. And the only other one, I did a quick Google search, the only other one that I could find was earlier that year in May at In Your House Beware of Dog, which was In Your House 8, which was Savio Vega versus Stone Cold Steve Austin, and Savio Vega won that one. And so it's like, okay, so there've been one and he's never lost? Like, you're going to throw out lost this Caribbean strap match. Well, there's only been one, you know? It's not like there's been 50 of them. I mean, I like the idea of the match. I think it's a cool, you know, gimmick match. It works. I thought it was a fun ending. And it left me saying, you know, I don't know why, but it was like Bradshaw screwed Bradshaw, because just the way he did that last move and unintentionally threw Savio Vega into that fourth turnbuckle, and Savio got the win, as opposed to, because, you know, before that, Justin's, you know, going to touch everyone and dragging Savio behind, and he's touching them right after he does. Mm-hmm. And so It was a fun match, you know. I'm hoping this is the end of that angle. You know, it seemed like it might be a conclusion. I don't know. But I don't know. It feels like, you know, thinking of more current JBL storylines, they seem to drag those out forever. And so maybe it's not. But it was a fun match. I liked it for what it was. It had a fun ending. And yeah, it was fine. I gave it a 6 out of 10.
I mean,
that's a
very middle down the road.
Very generous, I would say.
Would you go as high as 6, Tanner?
I'd go as high as maybe a 3.
Oh, Jesus.
What?
Jesus.
Okay, so yeah, I'm a little more glass half full.
Even I don't think it was that bad.
It was okay. I mean, it's not like it was terrible, but it wasn't like, oh man, like I got to have it. In fact, the more intriguing thing that this is maybe it's just a me thing, I don't know, but the more intriguing thing in my mind besides the match was seeing the ECW guys over at ringside, because I have always heard of the theory that, you know, ECW may in some ways have been propped up by WWE in more than one way. And
it's not a theory.
I mean, it's probably a reality. But yeah, it was like, oh, okay. Well, maybe there's a lot more merit to these claims than what meets the eye. And yeah, I think this, for me, showed further evidence of that. And there was a match that happened in the middle of that train of thought of mine. So, you know, it happened. It was fine. The Caribbean strap match, it was good. It was all right. It was fine.
And Savio Vega leaves the match still undefeated in Caribbean strap matches.
Yeah, that's good.
And as far as I can tell, there's never been another one.
I wonder why.
Well, I mean, I don't blame them for maybe trying to give Savio Vega maybe like a specialty match of his own, you know, something that he can claim as his.
Because he certainly don't get any towels.
Just a shame that they didn't revisit that more for him. I digress.
No. So then after that, we get a bit of a video package about the bout that we're all on tenterhooks about. Jose Lothario and Jim Cornette. The battle of the managers. We get Jim Cornette making a lot of jokes about the age of Lothario. And then we see Jim Cornette come into the ring to Vader's music, looking like a little bit like Vader, maybe a cross of Vader and Yokozuna a little bit, with the Simon Cowell style, very high pant line. Then we get a little bit of backstage, some really interesting footage of Savio Vega getting attacked yet again. Savio Vega has been in the wars in this event, and we're only 2 matches in, and he's been beat up by what looked to me like Razor Ramon and Diesel. So maybe Jim Ross wasn't talking out of his arse when he said he was bringing these 2 guys back to the WWF. We don't get to see the faces to confirm it, but they certainly were wearing the ring gear of former Razor Ramon and Diesel. But that, go on. I mean, that must be some talking points right there. I mean, it's the best part of the show so far.
Well, Mags, what makes you believe that it's not Razor and Diesel?
Well, I mean, it's the fact that Gorilla Monsoon said, Jim Ross, you're a fucking liar, last week. The fact that it's definitely not them, and I know it's not them.
But why?
No,
Mags?
Wait a minute. No, he said it wasn't Kevin Nash and Scott Hall.
Yeah, I mean, they are there. We saw
they're not
the
wrong, but they're not right
of them in the gear. So yeah, I mean, I am happy to eat crow if Scott Hall and Kevin Nash turn up on tomorrow's episode of Raw. Tomorrow, obviously, being the 23rd of September, 1996, not tomorrow, like, where we've just watched SummerSlam and Becky Lynch is there. That'd be weird if they turned up there. If they turn up, I will happily eat crow and say Jim Ross is not a dirty, stinking liar.
I mean, takeovers tonight. Anything's possible.
That is also true. I mean, Adam Cole, bye-bye. that'll be a throw.
Dun, dun, dun. Of course, by the time this comes out, everybody will know what's happening. Exactly.
He'll already have debuted for AEW. That'll be a whole thing.
So then after that we have Cornette in the ring cutting a promo about again focusing on the age of Jose Lothario, focusing on how he's taught Shawn Michaels everything he knows, and then the match happened. Luckily, it was less than a minute. A couple of shots from Lothario, an uppercut, and thank God for that. It was over. What did you, Ori, make of this epic battle of the managers, Jose Lothario taking on Jim Vader Cornette?
So Cornette looked like
an arsehole.
10 pounds of sausage in a 5-pound casing, honestly, first of all.
That's one of my favorite Americanisms. I absolutely love that saying.
I mean, it's typically said a different way, but I figured, you know, sausage was probably a lot nicer, you know. Oh, I almost said something that would have been really bad. Anyway, but yeah, I feel like, you know, This ended up pretty much how we thought it was going to go. You know, typical Cornette talking out his ass, you know, making these big claims, and Lothario comes out and whoops his butt. You know, I didn't find myself as excited as I thought it I would be for a Jim Cornette beatdown, but I wasn't unimpressed. This one I would give maybe a 4. You know, just because
per punch.
Because Jim Cornette got his butt beat, and you know I like seeing that.
You're getting into nice Dave Meltzer territory now.
Oh, now wait a minute. Hey, I haven't said anything bad about any women. Okay. Come on now.
You're over-egging the pudding there. This doesn't even deserve a rating. I don't think that... No. I would definitely not rate this. Tana, do you agree with Ori's assessment? I think she's looking on the bright side for this.
Yeah, because Cornette got his ass beat.
Seen the positives, and I don't think there's positives here to see so far.
For me personally, I don't know. I can't speak for Ori and how she's rating these. This match... Did I need to see it? Probably not. I mean, sure, Jose Lothario did San Antonio, Texas proud. I appreciate that.
One of your boys.
Thank you for your service, sir. And you did a good thing here. But would this be an all-time classic or a reason for you to watch this show? No. No,
I'm not saying that by any stretch of the imagination.
No, of course not. I'm not trying to.
This is a missable match unless you really just want to see Cornette get the snot beat out of him.
Yeah, you wanted to see Cornette get punched in the face, and that's reasonable, I guess.
I mean, if that's all you want from your wrestling, this hit ticks all the boxes.
No. Hang on.
But if you want in-ring skill and storylines that are interesting. Maybe not.
This is all I want and expected from this match. Yes, I want compelling stories.
And this
I want
is why you're
good
the draw.
Wrestling.
This is why you're the draw, because you see the good in this god-awful bullshit. And that's amazing.
That's the thing. Like, you have to go in with it for certain expectations, you know? For me, I'm the type of person that everything starts at a 5. Everything has the capability to either blow me out of the water or become the turd in the punch bowl.
A 5 out of 10, not a 5 out of 5. Yes?
Correct. Okay. A 5 out of 10. Everything starts at a 5.
Everything started off amazing.
Everything starts at a 5 and has the potential to either blow me out of the water or become the turd in the punch bowl. And so the needle moves. We've been talking a lot this weekend about needle moving, but the needle moves from there. Okay, that's how I rate things. So, you know, maybe it would be better if I started at a 1 and then, you know, out of 5. And so if that was the case, this would be a -3.
Yeah. That sounds more plausible.
But I knew this wasn't going to be a heavy wrestling.
Change your glass half full attitude.
No,
see
never.
This for what it really was.
Never. I will never not be at least a little glass half full. I will never be anything but at least a little glass half full. That's my personality. That's how I choose to be.
That is a mantra to live by. But here in the real world, watching this match, it was awful. I hate it.
Screw your real world. This is supposed to be fantasy. This is supposed to be escapism and enjoying it.
If it was supposed to be fantasy, then you wouldn't have enjoyed a real life man getting the real life, you know, beating that he got. Maybe here, I don't know.
I don't know about all that. Like this is the thing, okay?
Or like, fake beating, rather. I don't know.
I didn't expect super overwhelming, blow me out of the water, compelling story and wrestling. Jim Cornette doesn't wrestle. He doesn't. Jose Clearly. Lothario is 64. He's 64, not
105.
Right. He's older every second, as are we all.
As we all are.
Right. But, I didn't go in expecting this to be some high-flying, it's not going to be a Young Bucks Kenny Omega match, It's not going to be Young Bucks versus Penta El Zero and Rey Fénix, it's going to be a quick beatdown. It's going to be a squash. Jose Lothario is going to whip his butt, shut him up, and we're all going to move on to the next thing.
I appreciate the positivity, but I also don't think we should have spent this much time on this turd of a match.
Why are you arguing with me? Why are you trying to bring down my vibe, man?
Because that's my role on this show.
Screw your role and shut your mouth.
Man, chill out. You gotta calm down, man.
Harshing my vibe.
So let's quickly
throw off my groove.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey folks, PC Tony here. Thanks to our new partnership with Angry Lemonade, you can save 10% on physical products and digital commissions using the promo code CHAIRSHOT. Head to angrylemonade.net to check out their amazing catalog of products and services. Use the promo code CHAIRSHOT to save 10%. That's angrylemonade.net.
Are you looking for the newest and hottest in the world of pro wrestling? Then check out the amazing action on powerslam.tv, the biggest indie pro wrestling channel in the world. Get over 6,000 hours of the best events from over 150 of your favorite promotions from 20 different countries around the globe. Brands like Progress Wrestling, Evolve Wrestling, Combat Zone, Defy, PCW Ultra, PWX, Over the Top, Shine, and hundreds of others with fresh content added every day for only $5.99 per month. Get your free trial today at powerslam.tv.
Go to powerslam.tv, promo code CHAIRSHOT, get your free month. Again, that's powerslam.tv, promo code CHAIRSHOT.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Let's quickly move on. So we get an in-ring segment again, because that's definitely what you want to watch on your pay-per-views, and certainly not something that could have been done on Raw. But we get Brian Pillman coming down to the ring, and he's obviously promised a lot of things for this show. We get a throwback back to the South Africa VT, where Bret Hart essentially calls Brian Pillman a liar, calls Owen Hart a liar, and then Pillman just essentially trashes Philadelphia, saying that the forefathers of America will be rolling in their graves, that the birthplace of freedom has become a cesspool of drug abuse, battered women, and welfare recipients. I mean, he's hitting all those Republican targets there. He calls the crowds degenerates. And then he introduces the King of Hearts, Owen Hart, who comes down to the ring. And then they proceed to rag on Bret Hart for saying he made these claims that he would show up in Philly, and then reneged. He said that Bret claimed that Owen was the best Hart, that Owen was the best technical wrestler, that Owen was the best there is, the best there was, the best there ever will be. So then we hear that Owen has claimed that the reason Bret Hart hasn't come back is because he's scared. And he's not scared of Pillman. He's certainly not scared of Owen. He's scared of Stone Cold Steve Austin. And that brings out the 1996 King of the Ring winner, and someone who I actually wanted to talk about on the show in regards to how long it's actually been since he won that tournament. We had the whole 316, and we're now 3 months down the line, and we still haven't really built into this Austin 316 stuff. But it really starts kicking in here. We see that kind of that anti-hero attitude when he's calling Bret Hart a chicken, and then saying he's not a chicken, he's the stuff that comes out the south end of a chicken. And then we get one of Austin's all-time repeated classic lines: if you put their S in front of Hitman, you get his exact opinion of Bret Hart, which I think is absolutely a superb line. Essentially Austin finishes off by saying the people don't give a rat's ass about Stone Cold, so he doesn't give a rat's ass about them. And if Bret ever does come back, he's going to get his ass whipped. And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so. Really starting to build that Austin 316 character. So how do you guys feel, firstly, about this promo and this whole segment, and then how we've got this really slow build to what will become the biggest name in wrestling history in Austin 316. So, Tanner, give us your thoughts.
I really thought that this was actually the most compelling part of the pay-per-view up to this point. Very well done between, obviously, Stone Cold coming out and doing probably the most legwork in terms of the promo. But obviously, Owen and Brian Pillman are also very captivating characters as well. So it's certainly interesting to see this evolution of Stone Cold this early in his career. Obviously, we're still a bit of a ways away from seeing that fully evolve and develop into the final product. But we're certainly headed there. His promo ability has gotten a lot better. We're seeing him with the jeans and the jackets and all that good stuff. So, yeah, I really enjoyed this promo.
Yeah, absolutely agree. And Ori, compared to the kind of fast-paced, frenetic way that our storylines are burned through in modern-day WWE, how do you feel about this really kind of slow bubbling over of Stone Cold and the whole kind of Austin 316 thing that we're going through?
I'm kind of middle of the road on it. The first thing that I noticed about this entire promo was Pillman comes out without the crutch. And then when he brings Owen out, Owen comes out without the cast. Finally. Mm-hmm. Finally, we've ditched Dirty Nasty Cast. So that was the first thing that caught me. But I will agree with Tanner. This was definitely the most compelling thing thus far. I like the slow building of Stone Cold versus Bret. I do like that. I like that we've gotten Stone Cold on commentary at least once, interacting with Vince and building a little bit of that character. Do I want it faster? Yes and no. Like, I would like to see him some more in the ring. I'd like to see him more, you know, taking on some people, continuing to build that. I'm the king and I'm Stone Cold and I'm going to take out everybody and I'm just biding my time until Owen comes back. Would I like to see more of that? Absolutely. But I don't have a problem with these slower storylines that, you know, it's like we've talked about with the Ahmed Johnson situation. You know, absence makes the heart grow fonder. You want to see more of it. That's part of what makes it compelling. Give me some tidbits. Give me some little something. And while I think there could be more, I really like the long-term storyline that they're going with. There's very few angles in modern wrestling that I find are doing these long-term storylines, you know, and I appreciate it, especially when it's not every week in your face like they have been doing with Ahmed Johnson. Like, the one of the most refreshing things about this pay-per-view is Ahmed Johnson isn't really mentioned at all. We don't get any updates. We don't hear anything about him. And it's like, good. Not that I don't want to see Ahmed Johnson come back, but give me a reason to tune in. Give me a reason. Well, maybe they'll give me an Ahmed Johnson update. Maybe they'll, you know, for example, currently the one of the biggest long-term storylines that I'm currently invested in on modern day is Kenny versus Hangman. And that has taken a back seat. And I know, especially with, you know, who we got coming into the company, CM Punk on Friday night, and everybody's been kind of, well, what about Hangman? Why are they putting Hangman on the back seat for CM Punk? You got to realize, I know exactly where this storyline started. And it was way before WWE. This has been a storyline 3 years so far in the making. Tanner looks confused. And if you don't know where this started,
because I will you said WWE and not AEW.
Oh, my bad. My bad. AEW. <You're good. laughs> My bad. We're watching so much WWE. Like, and yeah, my brain's on the E. But one of the most compelling storylines in AEW is this whole setup between Kenny the Bucks and Hangman. I know where it started. It started on BTE. It started before AEW was in its inception. I can't tell you the exact episode, but I know it was in BTE. And when we get that payoff, it's going to be huge. And I have no doubt that they're going to throw in that footage from BTE.
To be fair, a lot of the early part of the storyline was Hangman being haunted by his boots. So there are similarities, I suppose, to
it's after this. It's after that. I can tell you it's after. Where the storyline starts is after the boots, before AEW started.
Yeah. After he killed Joey Ryan.
Right.
He should have, you know, never mind. I don't know.
Killed that one guy that nobody ever wants to discuss ever again. How about that?
I'm not going to, you know, propose that should have happened, but, you know, could have happened.
He's dead as far as I'm concerned. He's dead. Adam Cole's dead. No, I'm kidding. Everybody's a liar and everybody's dead.
Yes. So after this promo, Owen Hart makes his way to the back and we get clips of Mark Henry looking around the famous sights of Philadelphia, breaking the golden rule of reaching over the velvet rope to touch the Liberty Bell. We get Vincent Mann with a classic line, if you're 400 pounds and like 6 foot five, how do you get round town? By horse and cart, obviously. Yeah, because that's a thing. So then we are given more backstage footage where a very wounded, injured, kind of out of it Jim Cornette is getting treatment on the table, and we see Clarence Mason trying to force Jim Cornette to sign something. We kind of get an alluding to what that is when we come to the next match, which is for the tag team titles, the Smoking Guns champions out first, which is something that really kind of boils my piss. I really hate the fact that the champions are the secondary factor in this. But we do see a little bit of a dissension pretty much from the entrance going onwards, where Bart is walking way ahead of Billy and Sonny. And Bart's yelling back at Billy to hurry up and be more focused instead of being infatuated with Sonny. And then we get the reveal of a new Sonny poster, which has been digitally altered by
besmirched.
It's been besmirched. Deface. That is defaced. Correct. I think they blame Owen Hart, but there's no evidence to say it was him. And then we get Owen Hart coming out with his tag team partner, the British Bulldog, and in tow, Clarence Mason. I assume he's the new manager. Mm. So the whole kind of theme of this match was that Billy and Bart were certainly not on the same page, whereas the heel team, the brothers-in-law at this time, were looking to strip them of the titles, and essentially that's what happened. We get new champions, and we also get a breaking up of at least of management when Sonny essentially ditches the Smoking Guns, puts them in their place, and basically tells them that they're fired. So, Tanner, what did you think of this quality tag team match?
Yeah, I was super happy for Owen and Bulldog. I've been really bummed out about the Smoking Guns recently. Happy about Sonny, but bummed out about the Smoking Guns. It does lean into them seeing something in Bart, Billy. We'll talk about Bart in next year's A Change in Attitude episodes.
A doozy. Yeah. That's definitely something to keep invested in.
Oh my!
Yeah, that'll be a lot of fun. I'm ready for that part. 1997 Raw, but yes. for now, Billy Gunn. It looks like he's the one that WWE wants to take solo here.
And ironically, he's one of his characters is the one Billy Gunn.
It is. I'm glad you caught that. And
because it was totally meant. That was an Easter egg.
I'm interested to see where Owen and Bulldog go with these titles here. It'll be a lot of fun, and hopefully we'll get some more competitive matchups because Owen and Bulldog are both great.
Mm-hmm. And Ori, where do you think this leaves the Smoking Guns? Obviously, with Sonny, she was kind of the glue that held them together. She was the person that helped them win gold. And when she calls them essentially no good cowboy wannabes, do you think that this is the end of the Smoking Guns as we know it, or can they regroup and prove Sonny wrong?
I don't know. Like, first of all, I don't think this was a great match. It wasn't terrible, wasn't great. Just five, dead center. It was what it was. I will correct you on this, though. They did not reveal the poster until after Owen and Davey Boy had come out, and there was literally writing on it that says, "To Owen and Bulldog." And so it kind of alludes to the fact that, you know, they did deface it.
Yeah, I mean...
Or maybe she did it herself.
It was set up. Maybe Bart did it.
That's possible. Well,
We have
maybe she's just too focused on her new client Farouk and wants to move on anyway. So she's trying to create the dissension to potentially break away from them, cause them some distraction, at least mentally, so they're not as focused on the match, therefore causing them to lose so that she can fire them and move on. Mm-hmm. I don't know. There's all kinds of conjecture we can make here. But I mean, I don't know.
You didn't like the match?
I didn't not like the match. Mm-hmm. I didn't
I thought the
match.
I thought the ending was pretty unique in wrestling, how we got the dissension, and essentially it was Bart and Billy in a shoving contest, which leads to the power slam. And then one thing that did throw me was it looked like Billy did like a sneaky kind of a tag, but it was never kind of brought up, and he didn't really kind of attempt to capitalize on it. But then we get the win with Bulldog getting the pin. I like Owen and Bulldog as a tag team. I think they do some really good work, and Owen, he for someone who is in a lot of thrown together tag teams, I think he thrives in that position and really kind of like does well to bounce off his tag team partner. So yeah, I think we've got good things to come from this tag team of Owen and Bulldog. I'm just concerned that maybe the smoking guns, their time may be up.
But I mean, we've said pretty much from the beginning that Billy's the one that's really pulling it out for the two. I mean, there was a match between Bart and somebody, and it just, there was no ring general there. I don't even remember what match it was, but, which is a bad, you know, probably a bad thing.
It was the match where Billy was holding his opponent on the ropes, and Bart was meant to do the leapfrog, and he doesn't do it. And then
No. It was a singles match. Oh, it was Ahmed Johnson and Bart. Mm-hmm. That's what it was. It was Ahmed Johnson and Bart, and there was no ring general. It was like the blind leading the blind. I mean, we've said from the beginning that Billy, you know, of course we know how Billy's going to turn out anyway, but like Billy was definitely the breakout star of the two. So the fact that the Smoking Guns might be breaking up, you know, because they couldn't get on the same page, and now Sonny's fired them, you know, as clients, like, okay, go for it. Like, I'm not overly invested in them together as a tag team.
Yeah. I mean, I can totally see that mindset. And, we know as now Billy's still in the wrestling business, and Bart is long gone. So it's quite clear who was the star of that show. But then we go to, an interview with Paul Bearer and potential guest of the show, Kevin Kelly. Fingers crossed, who knows?
Maybe one day we can hope.
Yes, and essentially this is just to promote the upcoming match. Paul Bearer says that Mankind's going to be the WWF champion. Mankind said that Uncle Paul has told him it's his destiny to hear Shawn Michaels scream, and that Mankind is going to cuddle his heavyweight title. And then we get another match that we've been dying to see. Jerry Lawler taking on fresh Olympian Mark Henry. Again, we get Lawler doing his typical kind of heelish insults. Then out comes Mark Henry. This match is what it is. You can tell that Mark was still ever so green in the wrestling business, and this was essentially to build off his popularity coming off the Olympics. And he certainly wasn't ready to be a full-time wrestler. Saying that, he was able to pull off some very, very basic moves. Used his power to dominate Lawler. We got a cool press slam. We got Vince again excited about just how beefy Mark Henry's legs are, which is quite awkward. essentially we get the finish where Mark Henry has Jerry Lawler in almost a torture rack kind of position with a backbreaker style submission, and he picks up the victory. What do we think of the match, Tanner?
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring up Mark Henry's measurements being spoken about here, because 15 years later, they would actually do the same thing at Money in the Bank 2011 between him and Big Show. They would compare the size of these two men by their thighs and their foot size. Interesting ways of judging a person, I guess. But nonetheless, we have a I'm not going to call it a decent enough match, but I think I got out of this match maybe what Ori got out of the Jim Cornette and Jose Lothario match. I thought that this was an interesting debut. It was the right person for Mark Henry to go up against because everybody wanted to see Jerry Lawler get shut up. And yeah, Mark Henry puts Jerry Lawler across his shoulder and breaks his back, and everybody went wild. Yeah, I mean, what more could you want out of this? In fact, I'll make a hot take right now. I actually preferred this version of Mark Henry's offense compared to maybe some of the stuff that we saw him doing later on in his career. I think keeping it to the basics is my point. Keeping it to the basics and just being a strong man, I think suited him quite well here.
So you're not a sexual chocolate fan, then? That's what you're saying.
We'll get there. We'll get to sexual chocolate, Mark Henry.
Oh, Ori, your thoughts on Mark Henry's debut win here in the WWF, and we haven't even mentioned his get-up. Could it be more American? I don't think so. He's literally wearing a flag.
He could pretty much, you know, had some apple pie with him
and maybe, an eagle on his shoulder.
He helped a grandmother across a street, you know, as he made his way to the ring. I think there could have been
a cat out of a tree.
Yeah, he could have, you know, hit a home run for the Yankees. Right. As Mags wanted to talk about the Yankees earlier on a separate show. But yeah, he could have done all those things and would have qualified as being more American, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I feel the same way about this match as I did Jose Lothario and Jim Cornette, honestly. I mean, I feel like King put him over. He did. He's obviously green. He's greener than my hair at this point, you know. But the few moves that he did, like, obviously somebody worked with him just to get those basics down. And he took advantage of it. He did really well. I thought he looked good. After the match, we had supposedly King's cronies come out. We had Leaf Cassidy.
There's no real explanation as to why these wrestlers want to attack poor Mark Henry. But yeah, essentially the new Rockers come out and get a whooping. Triple H comes out and gets a whooping as well. He ends up being actually press slammed on top of the Rockers. And Vince in all this is getting so excited that maybe he was making ranch dressing.
Giddy with delight, you know. And the only thing that, you know, King's a heel. We know at this point, potentially, we know Triple H is going to end up a heel multiple times over his career. And he's kind of reading as a heel right now, even though whatever's going on with him and Mr. Perfect, which has not been alluded to at all. So we still don't know if that storyline is continuing or if it's just gone the way of the dodo, so to speak. So maybe this is because the new Rockers are helping out King. This is a heel turn for them. You know, it's a little confusing. It's a little muddled as to why they're all there. But it still served its purpose to show off Mark Henry, despite how green he is, despite how new he is, make him look good. Everybody sold well. It was, like I said, I feel the exact same way about this one. It did what it needed to do. I did not have huge expectations for it. I did not expect, you know, big, massive, compelling storyline that would go on for 10, 15, 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. Quick match, in and out, did what it needed to do, done.
I mean, you've absolutely nailed it with that very succinct description. So after that, we get a little bit of announcement that the main event for the next In Your House would be a Buried Alive match, which is ironic considering the next In Your House was called Buried Alive. And it kind of telegraphed the results maybe of the upcoming matches, because it was The Undertaker versus Mankind, still continuing that feud from a couple of shows ago. But we then lead into the core main event, if you will, the final curtain match. A cool little promo video about how Undertaker and Goldust are both masters of mind games. Sure, of course you are. So yeah, we get the final call match. It was as good a match as you are going to get from Taker and Goldust. I thought it was a very clean, crisp match. I don't kind of understand the point of the stipulation, the final curtain match, because it just looked like a regular match to me. It certainly went down like a regular match. We saw Goldust with his shiny wrestling gear on, the very kind of exposing kind of his ass eating half of the ring gear, ring gear, whatever. I mean, it was not good to look at. We see Marlena get involved a couple of times. There's a point where she actually slaps the Undertaker, which is very, very rude. But yes, as I said, this was a decent match. Lasted just over 10 minutes. Typical finish where we get a choke slam and then a tombstone and then a match over. So, Tanner, how do you feel about this being the end of the Undertaker versus Goldust, the final curtain?
Thank God. Thank God. This look, I'll get into my feelings more here in just a second, but to answer something that I think you brought up that's quite interesting, I was also kind of wondering, well, what's the deal with this being called the final curtain? And the more that it kind of, the more that I looked at the cards this week here, obviously this, as the time of this recording, this is SummerSlam weekend, and we have, you know, the what is it being called, the undisputed end or the undisputed finale match between Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly going on, and then you could also look at like the what was the title of the last match that Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano had?
One Final Beat.
The Final Beat match. Like it's these little I think it's just a little title that they're giving this here to Undertaker and Goldust. I don't think it really means anything. I don't know if there's like any, it's not an actual match type, as you alluded to.
I mean,
there's
I
nothing
mean,
happening here that's we out do of the ordinary.
Get yeah, we do get a little bit of pre-match talk from the commentary saying that this is essentially the only way to win is pinfall, that there's going to be no disqualifications and count out. But then when we get to the match, we see Tim White, the referee, doing count outs and threatening disqualification. So it kind of like it made this a regular match, at least for me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm feeling the exact same way. The signals weren't made very clear here. And maybe that is part of why I feel the way that I do about this match. For me, what this does, and this is, again, not against The Undertaker, and it's not against Dustin Rhodes, but this continues to solidify my opinion that The Undertaker's second half of his career was far superior to the first half. I didn't find this to be anything special, anything out of the ordinary. I feel as though it was just hey, this is Goldust and Undertaker. They're blowing off their feud. And that's it. Like that's all I really felt out of this match. And maybe that's overly harsh. If it is, that's your problem. But I felt like this was
Tana doesn't care.
I thought this was about as average as you could get.
Deal with it.
Yeah.
Or how did you see this final curtain match? Were you happy with the blow off? Did it go down like a damp squib? Give us your thoughts and opinions on it.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad it's over. I'm ready to move on. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. It was a gimmick match without an actual gimmick. It was a quick squash to just move on and be done with it. And I'm ready for that because they have convoluted this storyline between Taker, Pallbearer, Goldust, and
Shawn
Mankind.
Michaels.
So, yeah, throw in Shawn Michaels into the mix, the whole nine yards, so much that it's like I'm not sure what's what and where and how. It's there's too many chefs in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. You know,
and I think we mentioned that a couple of shows ago, how it seems Taker, Mankind, Michaels and Goldust have all been flipping between different storylines, and we've got no kind of no conclusion to any of them. And it just seems a little bit convoluted. So I'm definitely along the same lines as you two. It'd be good if this was the end.
Yeah, and Shawn Michaels feels like a supporting character in all of it, because really and truly, it's more Mankind, Taker, and then Paul Bearer, and then you've got Goldust and Marlena is somehow involved, but we're not really sure how. It's too much. It's and not enough of it makes sense to justify it. You know, and Shawn Michaels is just an afterthought to me. Yeah. You know,
and as champion, he should be front and center.
Right. You know, and I get, you know, they want to have Mankind versus Shawn Michaels in this match, and that's fine. I'm fine with the match, but when you've got all this other stuff going on. And like, if they could have left the entire Goldust Marlena portion of it out, if they could have been done with Undertaker versus Goldust already, then it probably would have been fine. I wouldn't be so confused. So what the frick is going on? You know, it'd have been fine. But I don't know. Like, I'm get it back to the whole Goldust. Undertaker, not Goldust, Undertaker, Mankind, Undertaker, and be done with it. Now, you know, hopefully now we've got Goldust and Marlena out of the picture, and Shawn Michaels can go and focus on other things, you know, depending on the outcome of the next match, and we get back to the crust of Paul Bearer, Mankind, Undertaker.
Mm-hmm. And that's a great segue into the main event, and for me, far and away the best match on this card. If you're ever going to torture yourself to watch this event, just watch this one match, because it's actually really, really entertaining. We get a promo with a friend of the show, Kevin Kelly. He's interviewing Shawn Michaels backstage. And this is actually, for me, it's a really refreshing promo by Shawn Michaels, because it sounded really, really genuine. Like it didn't come off as the typical WWF, I'm going to beat his ass and walk out victorious style promo. This was Shawn Michaels concerned about how he can approach this match when you've got someone as psychotic and as crazy as Mankind. How do you play mind games with someone like Mankind? And then he also speaks about how he doesn't know what's going on in his own head, so how can Mankind play mind games with him? And Vince kind of alludes to that this makes Shawn Michaels sound like he's a little bit nervous. But we do get Shawn saying he's going to do what he does best, and that's think on the job and do whatever it takes to come out of this match as the winner. And then we cut back to the ring, and we're seeing a casket being brought down, very reminiscent to the Undertaker's kind of entrances. And it's Mankind in the casket, and he pops out, and Shawn Michaels comes out with the Slayer of Vader, Cornette, Jose Lothario, and Vince. Vince loves himself a little bit of Shawn Michaels. He was probably more excited about this match than the actual crowd was. But again, like I said, this match for me was by far the best match. A great kind of almost greatest hits of what these two wrestlers could do at the time. A lot of kind of solid groundwork mixed in with a lot of Shawn Michaels, who is really good at the half line action stuff, and yeah, essentially this is a really, really good match to watch. 25 or so minutes long, and Shawn Michaels ends up being the winner by disqualification. Vader coming out to essentially interrupting the match, kind of building off what happened at SummerSlam. Tanner, give us your thoughts on Michaels versus Mankind.
Yeah, this was far and away the best match on the card. Like if we're using this 10 scale that we've been, you know, going back to, yeah, I would say this is probably about an 8, maybe even an 8.5. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was excellent storytelling from start to finish between Michaels and Mankind here. Yeah, just wonderful stuff. And interestingly enough, I would even go as far as saying for a match that ends in a DQ finish, like normally those are, you know, kind of go down very poorly. This here, I think it was actually done very, very well. So props to these two here for putting together an excellent match despite the convoluted storylines that we've alluded to. I thought this was just fantastic.
Yep, I totally agree with you. And I think that, as you said, then the DQ works in this because there's still more movie parts. This isn't just about Michaels versus Mankind. We've got the fact that we've Undertaker and Mankind still to come upcoming pay per view. So we've still got that looming in the end of the match, and we actually get to see that when Undertaker appears from the casket. To really kind of sell that this is the next feud coming on for Mankind. And then obviously there's the stuff with Shawn Michaels and Vader. Still looks like there's things to happen there. Aura, how did you find this match? How's it compare with the rest of the card? And what's your thoughts on what's coming up for the WWF out of this?
I will say I thought during the Shawn Michaels promo saying that he has nothing going on upstairs was just absolutely ridiculous. Like, so you don't have a brain cell just popping around, bouncing off the walls like Pong. Okay. All right. I mean, it almost lays into that himbo type mentality, which I guess really works for Shawn Michaels, you know, but I thought it was good. There were some confusing points in the match, like after Shawn Michaels put Mankind in a submission move, and apparently, I guess, numbed his knee, and Paul Bearer hands him something, and he starts stabbing his knee with it. Like, what is that, a pen? Like
an EpiPen, probably. He may have been having anaphylactic shock in the knee.
From a submission? Oh, I mean, unless he's allergic to all the damn glitter that was still in the ring from the match before.
It's a possibility.
That's another one of those things where it's just, I'm so glad they clean up in between matches now. Mm-hmm. You know, like, because honestly, I literally have a note that Shawn Michaels is a hair's breadth away, just a little bit more glitter, and he'll be a Twilight vampire. Like, it's just so... But it's everywhere. It's all over his chest. It's all over his face. It's all over, I mean, it is friggin' everywhere. Glitter is the herpes of the craft world. Just, it's horrible. You'll find glitter for millions of years to come. But I thought overall the match was good. I thought it was interesting that we had a Vader run in, and then once Shawn gets Vader back out of the ring, Sid comes in and attack him, which if you didn't watch the pre-show like we weren't able to, it's a little convoluted. So thank you, Mags, for giving us that information beforehand. But I mean, at the same time, we know that, you know, Sid has had Shawn Michaels back for a while now since International Incident. And so in a way it makes sense, but in a way it's still kind of eh. I thought the reviving of Mankind by turning the urn upside down was very strange. Interesting concept, but strange. And then, of course, we got Undertaker popping out of the casket, you know, and that led to him chasing, you know, attacking Mankind, chasing him and Paul Bearer out of the arena. And then, you know, getting that DQ win. It was a very interesting finish. It was a good match. There were a lot of great spots. The table, you know, putting Shawn Michaels through that table, both of them going through that table, was just crazy. Some spots on the not the apron, but on the floor with pulling up the mats, running into the steel steps. Yeah, it was a really good match. I really enjoyed it, and it was definitely one that I would suggest that if you really feel like going back and watching this pay-per-view, definitely watch this match. It was good, you know. And then we got a whole shot of Shawn Michaels showing his ass tattoo off to the crowd. I don't know what that was about.
Sometimes you just got to show it.
I mean, that happened on AEW this week where we got to see Big Show's ass. So why not a little bit of Shawn Michaels' ass?
I mean, but that made sense. They're showing off his scars, so that makes sense. I mean, we saw more of Jungle Boy's ass Friday night. We saw his whole ass Friday night on Rampage. I was like, that was not what I was expecting, nor was I ready for, nor did I need it.
And yeah, it happened. But let's go around the horn now and kind of give an overarching opinion on this show. And seeing as we've gone with the whole kind of a out of 10 ideology, let's give it a rating as a pay-per-view as a whole. So, Tanner, what are your overarching thoughts on this pay-per-view and a score?
I would say that there are parts of this show that are more enjoyable than maybe prior pay-per-views that we've covered. And there are some other parts that I could have certainly done without. There are things from the ridiculous, like the Razor Ramon and Diesel backstage beating up of attacking rather of Savio Vega.
Poor Savio.
Yeah, all the way through, you know, like I said, Mankind and Shawn Michaels being excellent. There is a lot of average stuff, or maybe even below average stuff here. On this card, though, which I have to take into effect, but I would give this probably as a rating, and I think the main event really, really helps. If you're going to watch the show, you should really watch it for the main event. There's the iconic entrance that Mankind has. Shawn Michaels is obviously great, and Mankind's, in more than one way, surprisingly, one of the best guys that Shawn Michaels has faced in terms of this run, this run here. They've got excellent chemistry with each other, which you wouldn't think about that at first, but it does make a lot of sense once you see the match. Overall rating, again, I'm going to probably go for a 6.5 out of 10. You know, 6.5
wow.
out of 10.
As high as that. That's almost in Ori levels of positivity. So, Ori, can you top Tanner's 6 out of 10?
No, honestly. Because
you've gone way past Tanner. You've gone just the end of the spectrum.
12 out of 10.
Definitely not. Definitely not. No, I agree with Tanner. Like, I've been sitting here flip-flopping back and forth. You know, it's better than a 5. It's not better than a 7. I could generally, just based off of the main event, give it a 6, but I don't think I could go as high as a 7. So I think, that honestly, the main event is what saved this pay-per-view completely. So definitely, I'm definitely in Tanner's corner on this one. Shocking, I know. But 6.5 out of 10. I'm going to agree.
I mean, Matt, I've ragged on this pay-per-view, a lot of it is for entertainment and comedic effect. There are positives on the show. I think the promo work of Stone Cold in that in-ring segment really shows where we're heading with that character. Owen and the Bulldog were really impressive, and I can't wait to see what happens there. The main event is really good. I mean, it's better than this show ever deserved. So there are definitely positives here. And the fact that it's less than 2 hours, it's a nice, it's a breeze in terms of time to watch this. So I think I'm incredibly more middle of the road than you two. I'm certainly not leaning towards giving it a 6, but I think a five out of 10, this is as middle of the road of a pay-per-view that you are going to get. It's not overly offensive in terms of giving it a dud rating, but it's certainly not good enough that I would happily go and watch this again had I not been forced to for the sake of this podcast.
Fair enough, Mags.
So, next week's show, we are back to the Raw block tapings from Hershey, Pennsylvania on the Raw from the 23rd of September, Tanner. That is the 23rd of September, 1996. Just so we're all aware that it's the 23rd, where we will get the end of the Intercontinental title tournament, and we will finally see a new champion. And we also get Bulldog and Owen in a match against the Body Donners. And we get the Stalker, who is someone who we've really missed. But more importantly, we're going to see Kevin Nash and Scott Hall back in the WWF. So
will you, though? Will you?
Are you calling Jim Ross a fucking liar? Because he's not a liar, goddammit.
He didn't say Kevin Nash and Scott Hall were coming back. He said Diesel and Razor were coming back.
Well, we will see on next week's episode, and you will certainly hear whether he fulfills that promise. Unfortunately, I think, Tanner, you'll be taking the lead on that one as well, so that'll be fun.
Exploding into the universe with vitriol and hatred.
So let's wrap it up, guys. Let's give the socials and get on out of here. Tanner, where can the people find you and your amazing content?
Oh, well, thank you, Mags. I appreciate that.
I mean, I only say that because I'm involved in a lot of that content.
You're like 50% of my content. So.
But yet I'm the draw. Okay.
I don't even know. I was gonna thank you for the intro, and then I got this. It was a very kind introduction, Mags. Yes, you can find me on Twitter at TexasGentleman_. You can give me a follow there. That's my personal account. You can hit me up there. That's cool. You could message me, and I might message you back. It could be a thing, or
you could be friends.
You could be friends. You could make a friend with me. I'm not that bad of a guy, I promise. Or if you're just strictly about the content, and I wouldn't blame you if you were, you can simply follow the Radio Techers Twitter account. That's RadioTekers. What is Radio Techers, you might ask? Well, what we do is we do Premier League football, MMA, and pro wrestling action, as well as other special events that might happen. Yeah, sporadically. You know, we've talked about dabbling into other things, but yes, if you are into Premier League football, just any kind of football, really, except for NFL football, a little bit of wrestling, a little bit of MMA, come hang out with us over on Radio Techers. We have a whole YouTube and Twitch page that you can find content, myself alongside Mags and our friends Matt, Chris, Simon, everybody.
Maybe by the time this drops, some new members to the team. We will see how that goes.
Hopefully so. We just dropped a review of SummerSlam last night. Myself and Mike Charlip, a friend of mine from back in the day, and Ori was in the chat last night. So was Mags. It was all a good time. So check out all of that fine content that we offer over on Radio Techers.
And Aura, when you're not in intensive physical therapy from carrying the Shaw, Tanner, and myself on your back, how can the good listeners get hold of you and the amazing content that you put out?
I was going to say something really mean, but I love you guys. I really do. As much shit as we all give each other, you know, I do generally like you guys and enjoy your company. This is really...
Generally.
Yeah, I do. In general.
On the basis of probability,
And it
quickly went from love to lack. I mean, now it's... I generally tolerate you guys.
For it being something
on my schedule every week. I feel like it's all right.
This is always, I was going to say, God damn it. I hate you both. I take it all back.
There we go.
I take it all back, man. No, this is literally one of my highlights of the week, is getting together with you guys and talking about, you know, Raw and these pay-per-views, and even before and after the show, the stupid banter that we have with each other. I really do enjoy it, and I enjoy the interaction that we get from the guys on Twitter, the guys and gals, and everybody interacting, and we really appreciate that. You can find me on Twitter, Twitch, Instagram, and TikTok. I'm back on TikTok at Ori the Draw. haven't really posted anything on TikTok. I'm trying to get, I've been bribed. Hopefully by the time this show comes out, I will have it straightened out. But
is this there's a legal situation? Do we need to
We don't need to call Clarence Mason. No, I don't need Clarence Mason. It's good bribery. We've been in our house 10 years and our bedroom is a hot mess. And my husband bribed me that if I would get things clean and organized and looking nice, that he would help me set up an actual streaming studio. So I've gotten it probably 98% done. I have a few little things here and there that I need to do. But we found an L-shaped desk the other day on Lightning Deals for Amazon. And so that is on its way and should hopefully be set up by our next recording. And so you'll get to see, you know, obviously the people at home won't get to see, but you guys will get to see more than just the back of my hallway and the back of my bedroom. I'll have things set up similar to Mags and Tanner with these nice setups in the back, something nice to look at.
Shout out to that, the time when Tanner put a virtual background on his screen and it looked like he was essentially squatting. That was fun times.
So, but I'll have an actual nice background. I've got some posters and different things, and so yeah, we'll have a better
professional podcast.
Yeah. I want to lean into this. I'm really enjoying it. I want to do more podcasting. I want to do more, shows and interactions, and I want to do Twitch more often and have people come hang out and enjoy what they see other than just me and my cluttered bedroom. You know, even though it will be decluttered by then, I want something nice. And so we've got some stuff in the works, and hopefully, as you know, once this recording drops, it'll be all set up and good to go. And then I'll be back up on Twitch. Right now, I'm just doing watch alongs of different shows, typically just Dynamite and Rampage. Although I could be, you know, persuaded to do watch alongs for other things. But yeah. Just kind of doing, I could watch some of the things. I did watch SummerSlam last night, and I am planning on watching NXT TakeOver tonight, so we shall see how that goes.
Very cool.
Yeah. Yes.
As for me, thanks for introducing it. You normally
you didn't give
Tanner.
Me a chance. You gave
Tanner.
No one a
I
chance.
I know how the land lies.
I got your back, Tanner.
Ori alluded to how much we kind of vibe and we appreciate everybody on social media and all the people who get involved in the show. It's amazing the fact that so many people have really taken this little kind of personal project of ours to their hearts, and we're getting lots and lots of great feedback. And you can add to that feedback if you wish by following the podcast account on Twitter at ACIA podcast, or if you want to go long form with your thoughts and opinions on the shows, you can certainly fire us over an email at achangingattitudepodcast@gmail.com. We'll certainly read your comments and maybe even get them out on a broadcast. Who knows what could come of that? But for me personally, you can follow me at Podfather Mags. I am all over the show here at Chair Shot with Five Rounds and with the midweek mainstay show with my good friend Ray Cash. I am also heavily involved with this amazing project over at Radio Tech, as we're doing some really cool stuff over there. I've got a lot of irons in the fire. We're quickly building a good following there, and lots of entertaining content over there for you to get involved with. So definitely go and check that out. But that's it from us. Tune in next week to find out who the new Intercontinental Champion is, and to find out if Kevin Nash and Scott Hall do show up on Raw. That's all from us, though. So from everyone here at Chair Shot, remember that you must always use your head. Bye-bye.
Noodles.
Do you want to wave this week, Tanner? No. There we go.
Oh, there it is.
See you later, guys.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.